Iran reacts to the U.S. president's latest comments about global oil supply, saying that Washington has failed to remove Tehran from the international market. Tensions escalate between NATO and Russia over Ukraine, as the Western military alliance accuses Moscow of building up troops at Ukraine's border. And thousands of migrants are still stranded on the border between Poland and Belarus, as Polish troops refuse to allow them to cross the border. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mews. Thanks for joining us. Iran says the United States has tried for decades to remove the Islamic Republic from the international market, but it has failed to do so.
What Biden said indicates that no country can be eliminated from the international market. For decades, the Americans have tried to remove Iran from the global markets, but they have failed to do so due to the creativity of our youths who have overcome all obstacles.
Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said that the U.S. president has to be aware that Tehran is carefully monitoring his behavior. Saeed Khatibzadeh said that Tehran will go to the upcoming talks for the removal of sanctions with an eye on Joe Biden's actions and comments. Those talks are scheduled to be held in Vienna on November 29. On Friday, Biden said that there are sufficient supplies of petroleum worldwide so that other countries can cut their purchases from Iran. That is part of a policy that requires the White House to affirm every 6 months that there is enough supply, oil supply, globally, to maintain sanctions against Iran. The Islamic Republic argues that the sanctions are illegal. Writer and political analyst John White says the exploitative nature of U.S. relations with other countries is pushing the world towards the East.
Necessity dictates that the U.S. dollar should not be seen as a viable, as a secure and stable international currency, given the vicissitudes of Washington when it comes to its relations with all the countries and the powers in the region. So that it is pushing the world towards an Eastern resolve when it comes to dealing with the West. The West is no longer the only game in town. It had been from the demise of the Soviet Union in the early 1990s, but things have changed and changed utterly. So the world is looking to the East increasingly. China's Belt and Road Initiative is knitting vast swathes of the world together in a spirit of cooperation and mutual benefit, whereas Washington is trying to still play by the old playbook of our game is the only game in town, and we say jump, you say how high. This is no longer reality in the world.
Tensions flare up again between Moscow and the West, this time over Ukraine. NATO has accused Russia of taking aggressive actions by building up troops at Ukraine's border.
In recent weeks, we have seen large and unusual concentrations of Russian forces close to Ukraine's borders. Similar to Russia's build-up in Crimea and the Black Sea region earlier this year. Any further provocation or aggressive actions by Russia would be of serious concern.
The NATO chief stressed that the Western military alliance is standing by Kyiv in the face of what he called large Russian military buildup at Ukraine's border. Ukraine has been locked in conflict with pro-independence fighters in the east since the Crimea Peninsula rejoined Russia in early 2014. Kyiv and its Western allies accused Russia of sending troops and arms to support the fighters. Russia, however, rejects the allegations. It also accuses NATO of destabilizing the region by increasing its military activities there and sending military aid to Ukraine. The European Union has decided to impose fresh sanctions against Belarus amid deepening tensions with Minsk over a migrant crisis. The decision was made during a meeting of EU foreign ministers in Brussels, where they agreed to amend the 2020 sanctions against Belarus. Before the meeting, one of the ministers accused Minsk of violating human rights, saying severe economic sanctions against it is inevitable. The EU accuses Belarus of using migrants to reach its objectives against the bloc, an accusation that Minsk has dismissed as absurd. About 4,000 people have been stranded at the country's border with Poland. Warsaw has deployed additional guards at the border to push back the migrants. A war of words is escalating between Belarus and the European Union over the migrant crisis at the border of the two countries. The situation is getting worse as temperatures are dropping below freezing, resulting in the deaths of several migrants. Hashtag Trending takes a look at social media reactions to the story.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another Hashtag Trending with me, Ali Rizzo. A humanitarian crisis is in the making at the Belarus-Poland border, where thousands of migrants are enduring freezing conditions. They are prevented from entering the European Union by Polish security forces. Stay with me to check out some social media reactions. The European Union accuses Belarus of endangering people's lives for political reasons, while Belarus and Russia accuse the bloc of showing hypocrisy for keeping the migrants out. Now, amid the blame game, temperatures at the border have dropped below freezing, resulting in the death of at least 7 migrants. Many have taken to social media to express sympathy with the desperate migrants who are stuck behind Polish borders. They say keeping these migrants in such terrible conditions just demonstrates the reality behind the so-called European democracy. Our first comment comes from Nexta. They wrote, "A large group of migrants go to the border. There are more and more migrants. They are not afraid of the cold or the terrible conditions in the camp. Their goal is to get into the EU at any cost and get to Germany." Pishti News wrote, "My heart cries out for these poor children. They throw tear gas at minors. It is really sad to see an innocent kid go through all this." Erdem Roni wrote, "Boundaries are cruel, so-called democracy in Europe." With winter approaching and frustrations rising amid the forests of West Belarus, there's growing alarm amid aid workers that the number of migrant deaths from exposure to freezing conditions will increase sharply. Ruptly tweeted, "Migrants pass Belarusian checkpoint at Kuznica border crossing." Our next tweet comes from Gapster. They wrote, "They have come a long way. If you were in their position, I bet you wouldn't stop trying. There's hardly a way to go back, and they need food too. There's no such thing as an easy solution." Helen tweeted, "Migrants at Polish border flock to collect wood as crisis continues." Some social media users compare the situation of migrants at the Polish border with the Afghanistan's refugee crisis, where neighboring Iran opened up its borders to receive as many Afghan refugees as it could. They also believe that the root cause of Europe's refugee crisis is Western military intervention in countries like Afghanistan, Syria, and Iraq. Our next comment comes from Ash Carl. He wrote, "The Afghanistan crisis is getting worse. More than 5.5 million internally displaced, over 682,000 this year alone. A severe winter, food shortages, and an economy in freefall. This migrant crisis is because the white racist imperialist terrorists destroyed these people's countries." Our final comment comes from Omran. He wrote, "For 20 years, hiding behind the US, the Europeans, particularly the low-life newcomers to murderous NATO, have massacred Afghans, Syrians, and Iraqis. Now the same scoundrels are denying their atrocities to avoid the price they must be blamed for, destroying the lives and livelihoods of the same disposed families." And with that, we have reached the end of this edition of Hashtag Trending. Until next time, take care and bye-bye.
Welcome back. Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan has accused Azerbaijani troops of intruding his country's territory. Pashinyan says he has also dismissed the country's defense minister over the incident. According to Armenia's Security Council, Azerbaijani troops surrounded 4 Armenian combat points on Sunday, but left the territory upon negotiations. Armenia also called on the international community to pay attention to what it described as Azerbaijan's ongoing aggressive actions at the border. The two neighbors have been locked in a dispute over Nagorno-Karabakh for decades. They fought a 6-week war over the region late last year, which left ethnic Armenians losing large parts of the territory. British police say that the deadly car explosion in the northwestern city of Liverpool was a terrorist incident.
Although the motivation for this incident is yet to be understood, given all the circumstances, it has been declared a terrorist incident, and counter-terrorism policing are continuing with the investigation.
The counter-terrorism police say that the explosive device was made by a taxi passenger who died in the blast. They say the identity of the passenger is believed to be known but cannot be disclosed. According to police, four men, all in their 20s, have been arrested in connection with the blast. The incident took place on Sunday morning when a cab exploded outside of the Liverpool Women's Hospital. Following the explosion, Britain's Interior Minister raised the country's terrorism threat level to severe, meaning an attack is likely highly. Rohingya refugees in India are facing an alarming situation. The destitute community is scattered in many parts of the Indian subcontinent, and the conditions have further deteriorated amid growing Islamophobia and a vicious campaign calling for their expulsion. Our correspondent Munawwar Zaman has visited a refugee camp and has filed this report.
"The violence in Myanmar was not enough for us," says the desperate woman upon our arrival. She says we are calling God in every possible way, but looks like our prayers are not being heard. She has many complaints, yet she can talk about the basic ones.
"There is a huge list of problems that we are facing, but the major issue is every one of us has not received free COVID vaccination, and many had to spend their own money to get those. Another major hurdle is the lack of toilets for us and shortage of water supply. With regards to food, God sends many good people to feed us almost every day."
After fleeing war-ravaged Myanmar and what the UN described as ethnic cleansing, they are now trying to rebuild their shattered lives in different parts of India. But in India, they are sometimes called termites, sometimes illegal immigrants. Apparently, they are also accused of illegal activities, but these claims were not reflected in the recently released National Crime Records Bureau analysis.
"Vasudeva Kutumbakam, which means the world is one family, sounds like an encouraging phrase. But looking at the living conditions of these refugees leads one to ask question whether the world has abandoned its responsibility towards them."
Rohingya refugees are struggling to survive in the world's largest democracy with enormous quantities of effort. Over the last few years, the community is in utter distress, sometimes detention in midnight raids, sometimes their camps being mysteriously burnt down. Regardless of the refugee crisis across the world, this particular community continues to be unseen victims of violence.
"Since our camp was razed down by fire, we have relocated to this place, and it's a very difficult situation in terms of living in crumbling space. We are having shortage of water supplies. A tanker arrives and it finishes within an hour. Another major issue is snakes on this land and the lack of toilets for women."
Official estimates suggest more than 40,000 Rohingya Muslims have sought refuge in India after a brutal crackdown against their community in Myanmar. Many refugees say they felt safe in India since they arrived, but over the last few years, a vicious campaign against their expulsion is haunting the community.
A new report by the New York Times has revealed that the United States concealed the data about the number of civilian deaths in a 2019 air raid in Syria. The attack could be a possible war crime, as it killed dozens of women and children. But a thorough and independent investigation never happened.
A new report by The Times has revealed detail about one of the largest civilian casualty incidents in U.S. history. On 18th of March 2019, the U.S. military carried out an attack in the town of Baruz in eastern Syria. An F-15E attack jet targeted a crowd of people in Baruz with a 500-pound bomb. 5 minutes later, it dropped another even bigger bomb, and then another. Initial battle damage assessments put the death toll at around 70. The Times also revealed that following this strike, the U.S.-led coalition forces had bulldozered the blast site to cover up the incident. The U.S. military didn't publicly acknowledge the incident, and the death toll was downplayed. Finally, this week, U.S. Central Command acknowledged the attacks for the first time. It said 80 people were killed in the airstrike, including 16 Daesh terrorists and 4 civilians. However, saying it was not clear if the other 60 were civilians, it justified the killings by saying women and children might have been Daesh members. The report says the death toll was almost immediately apparent to the military officials. It said an Air Force lawyer present in the operation center at the time believed the attacks were possible war crimes, but regulations for investigating the potential crime were not followed.
"Well, In an ideal world, there would be a prosecution, there would be a trial and a proper hearing, but the way the world is run today, it's highly unlikely that the United States will, first of all, recognize any international court, and second of all, follow the judgment of such a court.
The admission was rather unusual, as more often civilian deaths are undercounted by the U.S. military, even in classified reports.
The U.S. is guilty of killing civilians in many war theaters like in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria, in drone strikes and other military operations. Rights groups have accused Washington of hiding the real number of civilian casualties and underreporting them. And West Asia is not the only region suffering from U.S. aggression. For example, civilian casualties occurred in the U.S. military's secret air war in Somalia, with no justice or reparation for the victims of possible violations of international humanitarian law.
The Pentagon recently admitted that a drone strike in the Afghan capital, Kabul, on August 29th was a botched strike. It killed 10 civilians, including 7 children. The attack came amid the hasty withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan and days after a suicide bombing in Kabul International Airport that killed over 150 Afghans, as well as 13 U.S. service members. New research from a London-based civilian harm monitoring group named Air Wars showed that since 2001, at least 22,679 civilians were killed in U.S. strikes across various theaters, including Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Somalia, Libya, Yemen, and Pakistan. The group said that the number of civilian deaths could be potentially as high as over 48,300.
Well, the fact is that if the world's so-called sole superpower can flex its muscles anywhere it chooses, regardless of the United Nations, regardless of international law, and regardless of public opinion worldwide, this gives the worst possible example to American allies, and that is follow the leader. If the United States can kill people at whim, at any place, at any time, then presumably its allies can do similar things.
Pakistan, in particular, has been the victim of U.S. drone strikes. The U.S. began its attacks in 2004 to kill Al-Qaeda and Taliban forces. There are questions about how many civilians have been killed as a result of these strikes. According to the highest estimates, these strikes have killed thousands of people. The U.S. military, from CENTCOM to the Department of Defense, does not provide official estimates of civilian deaths, nor have they published such findings. Nearly 1,000 strikes hit targets in Syria and Iraq in 2019 using 4,729 bombs and missiles. The official military tally of civilian death for that entire year is only 22, and the strikes from March 18 are nowhere on the list.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the limelight.
Now, with Hodeidah and its environs in the Yemeni grip and Ma'areb about to be liberated, the UN should correct its correct stance on the crux of the problem in Yemen by summoning up the courage to criticize the Saudis, the Emiratis, the Americans, and the rebels of the Suj Hadi, and opening up talks with the legitimate governmental authorities in Sana'a in order to avert a human catastrophe. Dear listeners, what you heard was part of an article written by Kayhan International staff writer. This article is published under the heading Yemenis Advance as Invaders Retreat from All Fronts. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. News from Yemen indicates the steady march towards victory on all fronts by forces of the legitimate government in Sana'a, as the aggressors, including the Saudis, the Emiratis, and the Americans, have begun a retreat. If it is only a matter of time for the strategic central city of Ma'areb to be liberated by the popular Ansarullah forces, whose relentless campaign against the might of the better-armed rebels have also opened the highway linking the Yemeni capital to the port city of Hodeidah in the west on the Red Sea. In the meantime, the Yemenis have exercised the right to enter the deserted U.S. embassy in Sana'a, where suspicious elements on the payroll of the Americans were trying to stir up sedition. Washington, which with the start of the Saudi-UAE invasion of Yemen some 7 years ago, had shifted its diplomatic staff, actually spies, to the southern port city of Aden in support of the fugitive from justice, Mansour Hadi, has been raving and ranting in fear that the Yemenis might get hold of documents still left in the embassy confirming the nefarious activities of the U.S. The Yemenis have really bewildered the American terrorists, despite the UN's open enmity against them, by illegally sanctioning certain senior officials of the legitimate government in Sana'a instead of denouncing the Saudi UAE invaders and imposing sanctions on the oil-rich sheikhs. Nonetheless, the heroic forces of Yemen, although lightly armed compared to the rebels and braving the Saudi bombing of civilians, are continuing their advance towards Ma'reb. As part of their heroics, on Saturday, November 13th, they intercepted and shot down another U.S.-built Boeing Instinct Scan Eagle spy drone of the Saudi invaders over the oil-producing province of Ma'reb. It speaks volumes of ingenuity of the Yemenis to use a domestically developed surface-to-air missile to shoot down the sophisticated American unmanned aerial vehicle over the Al Juba district. It wasn't a fluke shot in the view of the fact that on November 9th, the Yemeni army had also shot down a Saudi Scan Eagle reconnaissance drone over the same district of Ma'reb province. Earlier on September 27th, they had shot down a U.S. Scan Eagle drone over the Migdal district of the same Yemeni province. Now, with Hodeidah and its environs in the Yemeni grip and Ma'reb about to be liberated, the UN should correct its correct stance on the crux of the problem in Yemen by summoning up the courage to criticize the Saudis, the Emiratis, the Americans, and the rebels of the Suj Hadi and opening up talks with the legitimate governmental authorities in Sana'a in order to avert a human catastrophe.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Economic divide.
Tax evasion has become a norm for the rich, the wealthy, the CEOs, and the political figures. But why does this keep occurring? The world is boasting of a new tax scheme, a reform introduced by the U.S. Yet many of these evaders are from the U.S., using U.S. soil for tax evasion. Hi, I'm Kavit Ahle, and today's program will tell you everything you ever wanted to know about tax evasion and tax dodging. Coming up in today's program, tax evasion, what is it? Offshore tax havens, and the money, how does it end up there? Complex and loosely regulated tax system is the issue. Then, the U.S. increasingly becoming a center for tax evasion. We could also mention the U.K. They promise protection of the assets of millionaires and billionaires through trust companies. And then we're going to take a look at something that is not really talked about when it comes to tax evasion, the ones that are being robbed of their rights, money that can go for rebuilding societies and communities, the money being robbed from Main Street and ordinary people. We'll give you some shocking examples.
Tax evasion. It's been around for a long time. There are laws meant to avoid the evasion, yet the practice continues. One group of countries stands out when it comes to tax evasion. The OECD, Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, represents 38 mostly wealthy Western governments, like the U.S. and the U.K., claims it has spent much of the last decade attempting to get agreements on rules that prevent tax evasion by wealthy individuals and major corporations. But the stats speak otherwise. OECD countries were responsible for 39% of the world's corporate tax abuse risks. But the U.K. clearly stands out. Some of the territories in the U.K., like Jersey, Guernsey, and the Isle of Man, were responsible for 29% of the world's corporate tax abuse risks. The failure of combating tax evasion is evidence when countries graded by the OECD as not harmful are responsible for 98% of the world's corporate tax abuse risks. So bad is the failure of preventing tax evasion that it has been recommended that the UN should take over the role of enforcing global tax rules.
In order to get an idea about the world of not paying taxes, it is necessary to make a differentiation hear about what is legal and what is not. Now, tax avoidance is the use of legal methods to modify a corporation's financial situation to lower the amount of income tax liability. Tax evasion is the use of illegal methods to modify an individual or corporation's financial situation to lower the amount of income tax liability. Now, some examples of tax avoidance: giving to charity, investing in an individual retirement account, taking a child tax credit, and taking mortgage and tax deductions are some examples. Now, one way of tax avoidance is the use of what's called tax havens. A tax haven is a foreign country or corporation used to avoid or reduce income taxes, especially by investors from another country. There's also what's called an offshore deferral, the ability of multinational companies to avoid paying taxes on overseas profits through a potentially infinite delay of returning those profits to the U.S. Let's try to get an idea about all of this. We have our guest, Stavros Mavroidis, who's a Greek economist, works in the tradition of political economy, joining us. He's a professor of political economy at the Department of Social Policy of Pantheon University, and was previously professor of political economy at the Department of Economics of the University of Macedonia. Stavros, welcome. Looking at the rich and powerful politicians, et cetera, people who obviously make a lot of money, corporations to people, they are using the U.S. As a tax destination of choice. Why has the U.S. And its states like South Dakota, Nevada, et cetera, become the tax destination of choice for people who want to hide their income or not pay taxes?
Well, let me try to clarify this point, this issue. The first, we have to bear in mind that the capitalist class, particularly in the West, and its political representatives are forfeiting the very rules they themselves set. Second, there is a long-run fusion between capitalists in the West and their political representatives. That is, the latter become capitalists and active capitalists become politicians. And of course, both of them perform the same illegal or semi-illegal practices. Now, coming to your question, the Anglo-Saxon countries, that is, the U.S. basically, but using the U.K. as a front in most of these operations.
All right. It's interesting how Stavros talks about semi-legal practices. Well, let's break down what Stavros actually said there, which is true in almost all countries, and we're going to focus on the U.S. here. Now, many wealthy Americans and billionaires actually donate money to politicians who favor government policies who are friendly to their business interests. And what do they get in return? Well, they get low taxes and less regulation. That's really important for businesses or for their business. So we're going to go back to Stavros and ask him about that. Stavros, what do you think? Many countries, again, using their money and storing them in offshore accounts.
So the Anglo-Saxon countries are facilitated in this by their dominance on the global financial system. Dollar is the main reserve currency, followed by euro.
This is our InfoNews section, where we take a look at what's shaking and moving in the financial and economic world. Our first look is at what's called the FATF, the Financial Action Task Force. Now, this headline read, has the FATF actually become a weapon of coercion for the West? Why would that be referenced here? Well, because it concerns Turkey. Turkey is now included in the list of gray countries from the FATF, which poses the question then, is FATF impartial? Key question there. Moving on to our next topic that we chose, and that's hyperinflation. The Twitter CEO, actually Jack Dorsey, has issued what's been described as a cryptic warning that hyperinflation will soon happen in the United States. He said that it is going to change everything, that hyperinflation is very high and typically accelerating inflation, and it quickly erodes the real value of the local currency. Only time will tell. At this point, I think we're in that. And as I explained, this erosion of the real value of the local currency is where the focus is going to be. Moving on next to U.S. Recession, actually, many economists are saying that there is a recession in the U.S. already. There are worries about goods shortages, the labor market, and coronavirus, which has actually worsened dramatically. So at this point, these factors are playing into the fact that many are concluding that there's a recession in the U.S. already. Next topic, China's economy. We're looking at it somewhat stumbling, and that's a big worry, because if China's economy keeps stumbling, it won't just take down Beijing. The whole world will collapse with it. So obviously a huge concern. The Chinese President Xi Jinping is said that in order for that not to happen, he needs to strike a delicate balance between eliminating China's crushing debt and then maintaining consumer confidence. So a misstep could spur global chaos, both economic and political.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
In this in-depth section, we have zoomed in on the United States and how it has become a tax evasion destination of choice. This comes from a country that has long condemned and actually jailed people who have committed this crime. First, let's take a look at the extent of U.S. involvement. In terms of the number of companies that are involved here, called trust, you have about 205 of them, which are holding combined assets which are worth more than $1 billion. That's the amount or the value that they are holding. This includes nearly 30 trusts that are holding these assets linked to people or companies accused either of fraud, bribery, or human rights abuses. Now, the immediate question that arises here, aren't U.S. authorities, like the U.S. Justice Department and the likes, aware that this is going on? And this is where the situation actually gets interesting. Let's take a look at the trust industry as a whole. Now, I mentioned a trust company. Trust company is part of the trust industry, which functions by sheltering assets and by promising levels of protection and secrecy that rival or surpass those offered in overseas tax havens. This shield is near absolute. That means it has protected the industry from oversight and has allowed U.S. states to become destinations to hide money. Now, so far, the states that are luring in wealth, here's a map of the United States. Let's take a look at what those states are. In this case in point, there are five of them: Alaska, Delaware, Nevada, and New Hampshire. But South Dakota, that one right there, that's the one that has become the favorite. It is proud, actually, to have assets from, believe it or not, 54 countries. These are clients from 54 countries in terms of assets. And then you have $360 billion, which is the amount that they're holding. That has quadrupled over the past decade. One of the largest trust companies in the state, the South Dakota Trust Company. But why South Dakota? Now, this really goes back to a man by the name of Jonathan Blattmacher. He's the one right over here, okay? He's a lawyer, and he's the U.S., what's been called, or how he's been described, the U.S. tax evasion specialist. He's the brainchild behind insulating the assets of trusts from taxes and creditors. Okay, so how did trust companies then get away with this? This is really the key question here. Well, year after year, this is what happens. These trusts would pitch legislative proposals, which then, with little opposition, the state legislators would turn the proposals into laws, which in turn protected the trust from creditors, from taxing authorities, from foreign governments. Then the trust, one of the things that it actually, the laws have done is it would protect the claims of future creditors, as you can see over here. So you can see how far-reaching this proposal by the legislators, which turned into law, goes. So let's fast forward to today. The greatest irony of it all, then, is when it is the U.S. that has proposed a system of so-called reforms so that people and corporations pay their fair share of taxes. And this is while the U.S. itself is a source for not paying taxes.
That global minimum tax would end the race to the bottom in corporate taxation and ensure fairness for the middle class and working people in the U.S. and around the world.
All right, joining us to give us an idea behind why this tax evasion phenomenon has accelerated in the United States is Michael Harris. He's the financial editor of Veterans Today. He's also a podcast radio show host of The Short End of the Stick. He's been in the manufacturing, financial, and technology sectors for 30 years. Mike, welcome. The U.S. becoming the largest tax haven. Tell us how these states within the U.S., like South Dakota, for example, are getting away with it. You have these secrecy laws that have been enacted, and basically more and more over the years, the U.S. to have become the tax evasion destination of choice.
Well, in the USA, we've seen a long-term influence of organized crime in our government. This is pretty widespread. We see it in our corrupt judiciary. We see it in our bought and paid for, bribed congressmen and senators. We see it virtually every aspect where the U.S. has lost its moral compass. And now the U.S. has turned itself into a country that is for sale to the highest bidder. So when you have the changes in these tax laws, they're merely doing what is asked of them by the drug cartels and by the people who are involved in human trafficking, arms merchants, all sorts of illicit sex trafficking, things along these lines. These are the people who are making the money. The U.S. Gutted itself industrially by under Bill Clinton by signing these treaties, NAFTA, GATLA, China, into the WTO. So a lot of this is driven by the fact that people still want money, they still need money to live, and so they're going along by tolerating this organized crime because that's the way to make a living now. I mean, the average guy on the street has a hard time. There aren't any high-paying middle-class jobs anymore. They've all been exported to China.
All right, time to take a look at what's being said on social media about tax evasion. And it had one surprise, which is consistent with recent findings of numerous reports, which indicated that the U.S., as we have said, has become this destination of choice for tax evasions. All right, this tweet, for example, if the EU and the OECD are serious about tackling international money laundering and tax evasion, then the U.S. must be addressed. Obviously, the point that we're trying to make here. And this tweet was worth looking at also. It says, I'm not interested in hearing what we can or cannot pay for when the top 1% evade $163 billion in taxes every year. Okay, well, let's do a facts check. According to the IRS chief in the U.S., tax cheats actually cost the U.S. $1 trillion per year. Now, he said the so-called tax gap has surged in the last decade. The last official estimate from the IRS was that an average of $441 billion per year went unpaid from the years 2011 to 2013. And most of the unpaid taxes are the result of evasion by the wealthy and large corporations. Let's see what is being said about tax evasion in Europe. Now, we looked at the UK for our search here, and this is what we came up with. This person says that foreign assets held are a majority in the UK. And then Ireland, in third place, comes Cayman Islands, which is used as shell company for tax evasion, Australia, and then number five is Brazil. This viewer makes a case and point about the real reason why the UK has actually left the EU, and it's because of the new tax evasion law. The viewer blames Tory greed, their reluctance to tax themselves, and the wealthy. And it says that it's endangering the people of the UK as a result. When it comes to you, if you would like to share a story with us, please let us know. While you're at it, please drop us a line and tell us how we're doing so we can actually improve the program. And now it's time to find out more about tax evasion from Mahdi.
Hey, Kaveh. Thank you. Well, tax and financial systems are powerful tools that are supposed to create a just society. Tax revenues should be spent on improving people's lives. Give equal weight to the needs of everyone, but unfortunately, it's not.
The financial centers of the world, like the US, Europe, leaders are able to funnel and siphon money away and hide it in these jurisdictions through the use of anonymous companies.
Under pressure from corporate giants and the super rich, governments have created systems that prioritize wealthiest over everyone else. How have they done that? Financial secrecy, tax havens embedded into the global economy. What happens as a result? Inequality and corruption is created, resulting in a corrupt system that undermines democracy. Before we actually dive into the subject at hand, let me ask a question. Are authorities aware of tax evasion? Sure they are. Here's the IMF on that matter.
It is a big concern that we have a large amount of tax shifting, tax avoidance, countries sending money to tax havens, and that's reducing the tax base from which governments can collect revenues and do the necessary social and economic spending that's required.
So, there's your answer. Yet, the game goes on. Banks are also guilty of helping the corporations and the wealthy dodge taxes, like in the case of HSBC.
I'd like to put on the record an apology from both myself and from Douglas for the unacceptable events that took place at our private bank in Switzerland.
Well, just to be clear, what are you apologising for?
The lack of controls and the practices which now, judged with benefit of hindsight, we would not be at all comfortable with if they were happening today.
The amount of money that the world misses out on tax evasion is shocking. One source, Tax Justice Network, reported that countries are losing a total of over $427 billion in tax each year to international corporate tax abuse and private tax evasion. But a closer look at the report reveals that the numbers are even higher. Multinational corporations paid billions of dollars less in tax by shifting $1.38 trillion worth of profit out of the countries where they were placed into tax havens. Corporate tax rates either were low or didn't exist there. They placed a total of $10 trillion in financial assets offshore. When it comes down to it, rich countries are responsible for almost all global tax losses. Which countries, you ask? Well, we covered that earlier in the program, but it is worth mentioning again. British territory Cayman is responsible for 16.5% of global tax losses. That's equal to over $70 billion. The UK accounts for 10%. That is over $42 billion. The Netherlands, 8.5%, which is over $36 billion. Luxembourg, 6.5%. That's over $27 billion. And finally, the US, 5.53%, which is over $23 billion. We have used the Tax Justice Network as a source for some of our data, and we felt it's necessary to relay the sentiment of Alex Cobham, chief executive of the Tax Justice Network. He said a global tax system that loses over $427 billion a year is not a broken system. It's a system programmed to fail. Our governments have programmed the global tax system to prioritize the desires of the wealthiest corporations and individuals over the needs of everybody else. Wouldn't it be great if we can get a politician to be confronted with tax evasion questions? This was the case with Iceland's former prime minister. Pay close attention to how he breaks down after tax documents showed he and his wife used an offshore firm to allegedly hide million-dollar investments.
Have you or did you have any connections yourself to an offshore company?
Myself? No. Well, the Icelandic companies, what's it called? The it's an unusual question for for an Icelandic politician to get. It's almost like being accused of something. But I have never hidden any of my assets.
Mr. Prime Minister, what can you tell me about a company called Vintris?
Well, it's a company, if I recall correctly, which is associated with one of the companies that I was on a board of. So now I'm starting to feel a bit strange about these questions, because it's like you are accusing me of something.
So what do you think? Guilty? Not guilty? You be the judge. But in case you don't understand the gravity of the situation, the following clip may jolt you in seeing what tax evasion is all about.
The reality is not what you believe, that your prime minister has the power to decide on the future of your country. The power is hidden here.
So when the UK Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, comes out and says the UK is committed to a global minimum corporate tax of at least 15%, rallying behind a US-backed plan, it should be taken with a grain of salt.
What this deal does is ensure that with a minimum rate of tax that we can make sure there's a level playing field for countries and companies wherever they're operating, ensuring that they pay the right tax in the right places at the right time.
Please write to us and let us know what you think about the program. Any questions and comments are welcome. The following are our links and addresses. From me, Mahdi, it's goodbye until next week.
Tax evasion, which is different than tax avoidance, we need to make sure that that is clear to you. It's going to persist. Why? Because the law allows it to do so. It's as simple as that. But what is the downside of this? Well, it's how the rich and the corporations, how they're getting away with it and becoming richer as a result. Now, they're doing that at the expense of their citizens. Money that they're avoiding, well, it could go for things like infrastructure, for schools, for hospitals, and things of that nature in general. And in this age of COVID-19, where every penny counts, tax evaders need to be stopped. Of course, that's a huge challenge. Well, that does it for this edition of Economic Divide. It was great having you on board, and we do look forward to any comments or questions that you may have. For now, it's goodbye from me, Kovit Tafwai. I'm looking forward to seeing you next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters. 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastorday.com/en. And now, you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.